Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, Peter Schweizer, author of the new book Red Handed. This episode, one of the most important episodes that we have done on the topic of China. If you have any concern that the Chinese are taking over America, listen to this entire episode. Listen to it intently. Peter Schweizer goes into great detail how the Chinese Communist Party is purchasing the American elites, how they're getting rich, and they're helping China win. You guys can email us your thoughts as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. It's a Saturday episode. There are no sponsors of the Charlie Kirk Show, except you. No advertisers, I should say. So if you want to support our show, go to charliekirk.com/support. That's charliekirk.com/support. Stephen from Ohio, thank you for your support. Lisa from New York, thank you for your support. Alfredo from New Jersey, thank you for your support. Joshua from Massachusetts. Shannon from Indiana. Joseph from Pennsylvania. Barbara from Massachusetts and David from North Carolina, thank you guys on this weekend episode of the Charlie Kirk Show for supporting us. If you want to get involved with Turning Point USA, go to tpusa.com, where we play offense with a sense of urgency to win the American culture war, where we focus on educating the next generation and future generations on American values, tpusa.com. That's tpusa.com. Turning Point USA is where we are making a difference for the future of America. Red-handed. By Peter Schweizer. Buckle up. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
I am just so excited and honored to have the next guest we have on here, and he's someone that I've been wanting to talk to for quite some time, someone who I think is one of the last journalists in the country who has this unbelievable new book out called Red Handed, How American Elites Get Rich Helping China Win by Peter Schweizer. I have so much respect for this man. He's courageous and clear. Peter, welcome to the Charlie Kirk Show.
Well, thanks so much, Charlie. I appreciate that kind introduction. It's great to be here with you. Thanks so much for having me.
You're probably the most effective investigative journalist of this generation. You are willing to go after both sides, and we're going to talk about that throughout this conversation because it's not just about the Democrat Party. It's about the elites in general. Tell us about this book, and then let's dive into some of the details.
Yeah, this book is really looking at the question that China has said really for more than a decade that the Chinese Communist Party, they are determined to surpass the United States and defeat us. And the question is, what is our leadership class doing about it? And what really the book concludes and demonstrates, I think, with a lot of evidence is what our leadership class is doing is selling us out. They're getting sweetheart deals from China. This is part of China's strategy. They call it elite capture. And it's really pretty simple, Charlie. Rather than go toe-to-toe with the United States, they figure, let's just, in a sense, cut off the head of the snake. Let's buy off the elite class in Silicon Valley, on Wall Street, and in Washington, D.C., and then we can do what we want. And we are perilously close to being in exactly that situation where the United States is not going to do anything to resist China. And if we're in that situation, God help us.
You know, I thought you were going to say something. You said, well, the answer is they're doing nothing. Actually, if they were doing nothing, it'd be better, right, Peter? It's worse than that.
That's true.
If they were just kind of ignoring it, that'd be better than what they're getting paid off.
Right. Yeah, they're aiding and abetting the enemy. You're exactly right. Not only are they not doing something to challenge what China's doing to us, they are actually actively helping them. I mean, you've got titans in Silicon Valley, people like Bill Gates, companies like Google that literally are sponsoring research and providing resource for research in China into artificial intelligence with laboratories that are linked to the Chinese military. So they're aiding and abetting a military that is pointing its weapons at us. And you can find similar examples elsewhere. So you're quite right, Charlie. It's not just that they're not doing nothing. They are actively aiding and abetting China in their race against us.
So you call this in your over quarter of a century of being an investigative journalist and a good one, I might add. This is the scariest investigation you've ever conducted. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it's the scariest for a couple of reasons. First of all, the breadth and the depth of it. You know, I've done exposés in the past on insider trading in the stock market, which, of course, is a problem. part. I don't think puts the country in peril. I've obviously done investigative work on the Clintons in my book, Clinton Cash. Again, that was focused on that one political family. But in this case, we're talking about something that's all pervasive. We're talking about the biggest names on Wall Street, the biggest financial institutions there, certainly the biggest names in Silicon Valley, and the most powerful people in Washington, D.C., certainly in the White House with the First Family, but also with the Speaker of the House, leaders in the Senate. So it's all pervasive, and the stakes are so high. China's made clear, the Chinese Communist Party has made clear, their objective is to seize what they call the commanding heights so that they can dominate and supplant us as the world's most powerful country in the world. And that is something we ought to be concerned about.
Well, definitely. And it's not that their ambition is anything new. The Soviet Union wanted to do the same thing. It's their strategy and their patience that is different. Peter, talk about that. The Soviet Union, they were obviously very antagonistic towards the West. They tried many proxy experiments in Rhodesia and Cuba and other places. But the Soviet Union might have had some success that McCarthy was trying to uncover in infiltration, but nothing close to what the Chinese Communist Party has been able to do, where they said, hey, we're going to use the market system, the love of money of the West against them. Tell us about that.
No, that's a very, very important point, a brilliant point that you're making. You know, during the Cold War, the Soviets had a strategy like this. They couldn't execute it because they didn't have the money. I mean, remember, it was Vladimir Lenin who, you know, basically said the capitalists will sell us the rope by which we'll hang them. And at the same time, he said that the capitalists will be deaf, dumb and blind in the face of what we're doing. Brilliant strategy. The problem is they didn't, you know, nobody in the West wanted rubles and they simply couldn't pay them. The problem is China does have the money, and you add to that elements of sort of the Maoist strategy that they've employed, and we have a real problem. Sometimes what people will say is they'll look at, you know, a politician like Joe Biden or Nancy Pelosi, and they will say, well, you know, look, they're being critical of Beijing. They're criticizing them for their treatment of the Uyghurs. China's fine with that. They have a strategic concept that loosely translated to English means a big help with a little bad mouth. And what it basically means, Charlie, is, you know, if you say a few bad things about us, we don't really care. The main thing is if you're giving us the main elements of what we want, which is access to Western capital, access to Western technology, if you don't interfere with the flow of those things, you can criticize us about the Uyghurs from time to time. We don't care because you're giving us, you know, big help with a little bad mouth. It's a genius strategy, and it's working.
Well, it's brilliant also because then it gives them cover to go back to their constituents and say, oh, no, I sent a tweet out actually 2 months ago. Okay.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. It helps maintain some semblance of credibility. I'll put that in quotation marks with these elected officials because they point to it all the time. It's meaningless. Beijing doesn't care if Nancy Pelosi, you know, holds a press conference and slaps them on the wrist for the Uyghurs. They really don't care.
So you mentioned something interesting, which is that China has money. And something I want to explore with you as we dive into the details of this book is how that actually happened. Because China was kind of in a catch-22 in the 90s, where we allowed them into the World Trade Organization. And that was kind of the beginning of their entrance into the Western markets. And China was, you know, they're not creators. They're not inventors. Instead, they have a lot of people. And they basically became this massive place where labor redomiciling could occur. They have money now, but there were some decisions made in the 80s and 90s to allow China into the market.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Look, there was a promise we were given by American elites, and this is Republican, Democrat presidents, people on both sides of the aisle. Wall Street certainly pushed this idea. Big tech pushed this idea. And it was pretty simple. If we open up our markets, if we provide capital to them, if we give them access to technology, if we let them buy our blue jeans, they're going to become more like us. The government's going to become less repressive. They're going to become basically a quasi United States. Well, of course, that didn't happen. In fact, the opposite has happened. Under President Xi, they are far more repressive than they were before. They're far more aggressive than they were. So the ruling class, the elite class in the United States that pushed this idea was flat out wrong. Well, guess what? They don't care because they might have been wrong, but they got rich doing it. The biggest banks on Wall Street, Goldman Sachs, they actually went over to China in the 1990s and said, here's how to set up your system to allow the Communist Party to stay in control, but to have these elements of capitalism that will allow your economy to grow. So we now have a increasingly rich China, an increasingly aggressive China, and it is a China largely of our creation, because we bought into this myth, this lie that they would become more like us, and that has not happened. No matter, the people that were pushing that line got rich along the way. So honestly, they don't seem to care all that much.
I bought into it too. First couple of years I was doing this, when I was 18 or 19 years old, I remember going to think tanks in D.C. and I asked questions about China, and they would give me these papers that were obviously funded by McKinsey, where they said, no, it's actually a really good thing. You get access to cheaper goods and it keeps inflation down and it's this wonderful thing. And they're going to be like us. Like, eventually it's not going to be Beijing. It'll be Brooklyn, and we'll all live in this kind of harmony together. And I bought it, and I was young, obviously, but the elites should have known better, but they did probably know better. That's what I want to ask you. I want to explore that, is how much of this have they really kind of admitted to themselves they're betraying the West, and how much of this is kind of like, I'm just going to make money and I don't, you know, really care about the consequences. I want to ask you about the psychology of it, because I'm really interested in it. Peter, we could get into this, you know, as we go case by case, because I do want to get into the specifics of the book. It's just such an important contribution, what you've done here, and courageous, by the way, because people are so afraid to touch this topic. How much of this kind of selling out of the America to China, how much of this is just kind of seeking profits? You know, what's the psychology behind here? How do these elites that you have on the front cover here, John Boehner, Elon Musk, Nancy Pelosi, LeBron James, I think that's Henry Kissinger, if I'm not mistaken, and then Bill Gates, and then Joe Biden, how do they justify this?
It's a great question, Charlie. I think for some people, the motivation is profit and money, particularly those that don't have a lot of it. You know, if you're in public life and you're a guy like Joe Biden, and you want to accumulate assets, or your family wants to accumulate assets, it's going to be very tempting, and you're going to be willing to play ball if you know, you don't have moral problems with doing this. With other people like Bill Gates, who's worth, you know, $100 billion plus, it's harder to understand. And I think in a lot of cases, the motivation isn't simply just about money. I think if you look at Bill Gates, I think if you look at Elon Musk, I think if you look at the guys at Google, there's a you might say, authoritarian impulse or an authoritarian lust that they have. That's a pretty strong statement to make, but they make these statements about China where they talk about the fact that decision-making in China is so much more efficient. Some of them even say that the Chinese dictatorship is more responsive to the needs of the people than America's democratic republic. It's a bizarre sort of position to have, but I think they actually believe it. And I quote in the book from a computer scientist from MIT in the 1970s, a guy named Wiesenbaum, who makes a really interesting observation, Charlie. He said, those that work in technology, that are computer programmers, in a sense, they can develop a godlike complex. Because unlike any military commander, political leader, when they are doing their work as a programmer, they are God. They get to configure the program, the universe, the platform, the way that they want to do it. That's what Mark Zuckerberg got to do with Facebook. He got to, in a sense, reformulate the way in which people interact. And his concern was that this leads people in the tech space to think that they should start reorganizing the rest of the world. So I think it's money, certainly in the case of a lot of politicians. But I think when it comes to these very wealthy elites on Wall Street and Silicon Valley, there is this respect and admiration that they have for dictatorship that's very troubling. And I think is part of the reason they say such wonderful things about Beijing. It's not just getting access to the market. They actually really believe some of this stuff.
That's such an important point. I mean, you remember Mike Bloomberg said that when he was running for office. He's like, well, come on, you're trying to tell me that Xi Jinping isn't responsive to the needs of his people? And you're right. I mean, Mark Zuckerberg, it's not just a matter of being God and configuring a new universe. It's even worse than that. It's like, I can see what other people think as well. Like, I can go see their private messages. I can see their thoughts and their sentiments. I can manipulate them. I can actually incentivize them to buy certain products and feel certain ways and to get really depressed or really excited. And I can control dopamine flows in teenage girls. Like, really creepy. You're right. It's beyond any sort of control that Alexander the Great ever would have possibly ever had. When you did this research, were you shocked at the extent of the connection between the American ruling class in every single industry to the Chinese Communist Party?
Yes. Yes, I was. I expected there to be more big names in big tech and on Wall Street who had refused to play the game with Beijing. That's the reality. I mean, if you look at the titans of the tech world, you're talking about Bill Gates. You're talking about the founders of Google. You're talking about Mark Zuckerberg, you know, a few others that I mentioned in the book. Every single one of them has deep, troubling and serious ties with Beijing. Same thing on Wall Street. BlackRock, Blackstone, Ray Dalio's, Bridgewater Associates, the biggest hedge fund in the world. All of them falling over themselves, saying wonderful things about President Xi, turning their gaze elsewhere when it comes to serious human rights violations or the national security threat that China poses. Every single one of them is doing this. So it is all pervasive. There are a few courageous voices resisting this in the tech world. I talk about Peter Thiel, who has sounded the alarm bells on this very effectively. But yes, I'm alarmed by the extent of, I'm also alarmed by the fact, Charlie, that nobody asks them these questions. When they go on CNBC, when they go on ABC News, they never get asked questions about the things they say about China.
Never. Red-handed, how American elites get rich helping China win. And I think, Peter, you could correct me, HarperCollins, is that the imprint here? They're saying they've never had such pre-orders of a book ever. Is that right? That's what I heard.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, the book is selling great. I'm very thankful to everybody who's got interest in this. And Charlie, I'm sure you'd probably say the same. It gives me hope that there are millions of people out there that are concerned about these issues. And I got to be thankful for that.
I totally agree. My goal is for you to beat To Kill a Mockingbird. Nothing against that book. I actually kind of like it, but that would save Western civilization. I think HarperCollins owns the rights to To Kill a Mockingbird. I could be wrong. Okay, Peter.
I think you're right.
Let's get into the specifics of Joe Biden. He's right on your cover. The floor is yours.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I first reported on the Biden family's commercial ties with China back in 2018 and believed it to be a story about cronyism and corruption and self-dealing and Chinese influence peddling. But Charlie, with new evidence that's come out from the laptop, from emails from some Hunter Biden's business partners, we got access to their email accounts. The story has taken a significant and I think very troubling change. And that change is we are now talking about a story that enters the realm of the intelligence world and possibly espionage. What do I mean by that? Well, we decided to look back and trace who actually made those commercial deals happen in China for the Biden family. And what we found is that the Biden family and their companies, Hunter's companies, got some $31 million from Chinese businessmen in deals. And every single one of these deals was put together by a Chinese businessman who had ties to the highest levels of Chinese intelligence. So what do I mean by that? Well, there's a $20 million deal where Hunter Biden gets an ownership stake in a financial management company that's financed by the Chinese government, of all things. He, of course, has no background in finance or anything like that, but he gets this deal. Who makes that deal happen? Who gives Hunter Biden this windfall of money? Well, his name is Che Fang. And Che Fang, at the same time he is helping this deal happen for Hunter Biden, is business partners with the Vice Minister for State Security in China. This is their spy agency, their KGB. And that person's job at the Ministry for State Security is recruiting foreign nationals to spy for China. He's also reportedly responsible for North American intelligence operations. There's another businessman that helps make that deal happen. And in another instance, transfers $5 million to one of Hunter Biden's companies. And that guy, Mr. Zhao, is business partners with the family of the former Minister of State Security, the guy who runs the entire spy apparatus in China. So what you see, Charlie, is this concentration of people connected to Chinese intelligence who are throwing deals at the Biden family, and the Biden family are taking those deals. And the question everybody has to ask themselves, I think we both know the answer to this, is the Chinese intelligence service, is the Chinese state, are these businessmen just philanthropists? Of course not. Of course not. They are doing this because they expect something in return, and the deals kept flowing. So my belief is that they got certain things in return, and we have to now entertain the notion that the Biden family is compromised.
It's a crime syndicate the CCP is running. The mob doesn't give money to the local charity because they care about the orphans or the disadvantaged. They want something right out of it. How much money has the Biden family received from the CCP?
Yeah, so we believe it's some $31 million. That's based on the deals we know. There could possibly be other deals. And what's important to point out here, Charlie, is that it's people that will, you know, on the political left say will acknowledge that Hunter Biden did these things. They try to sort of siphon it off and say, well, you know, that's Hunter Biden. That's a Hunter Biden problem. The problem is, the other thing we point out in the book, and there's numerous examples of this, Hunter Biden and Joe Biden, throughout the time he's vice president, probably still today, as far as I know, have intertwined finances. We know that during the vice presidency, Hunter Biden was paying Joe Biden's bills. Some of those are kind of rudimentary, that he'd pay a $300 phone bill so Joe Biden could have this kind of strange back channel private telephone line. But he also paid for renovations on his home up in Delaware, and there are other expenses. So when Hunter Biden is getting these foreign deals and collecting this money, one of the beneficiaries is Joe Biden himself.
So on page 37 of your book, Red Handed, that everyone should go buy at least 5 copies of and give to your loved ones. Okay. And honestly, give to your elected official if you see them and hand it. Be like, what are you doing about this? Don't just tweet about it. You mentioned someone that I was going to ask you about, Peter, which is Tony Bobulinski. Tony Bobulinski seemed to be a very ethical person. He had no reason to do what he did. Tucker Carlson aired his interview. It was viewed by 10 million plus people. And then he got memory hold, to use an Orwell term. We just kind of stopped talking about him.
Yeah.
What's the latest with Tony Bobulinski? Because he told us very explicitly, in no uncertain terms, 10% for the big man. The big man is Joe Biden. We met in like the back of the Beverly Hilton Hotel or something, right? In this kind of weird, like clandestine meeting. And Joe Biden came and he was like happy-go-lucky, but it was very clear that he was being factored into the deal with the Chinese. Tell us about the curious case of Tony Bobulinski.
Yeah. You know, Tony, I think, is somebody who's a private person. I mean, he's not a political person at all. And he saw this happening and decided to alert the public to it, let the public know what was going on. And everything he said has been confirmed by the documents in the laptop and elsewhere. That deal, the 10% for the big guy phrase, involved a Chinese company called CEFC. CEFC was run by a Chinese businessman named Yi, who before taking this job had actually run an organization that was funded and directed by Chinese military intelligence. This company, CEFC, was located in a section of Beijing that is controlled by the Chinese military. So there's all kind of red flags. And, you know, as Tony Bobulinski recounts, he found out pretty quickly who he was dealing with on the Chinese end, which troubled him. But he also saw that what this was for Hunter Biden was not any kind of legitimate business. This was about him collecting money and that Joe Biden was intimately involved. So I think Tony Bobulinski, as far as I know, really has decided to return to private life. You know, hopefully he will make an appearance again and discuss further some of his findings. But to me, he was very, very credible because he was not political.
Yes.
He was brought into this deal because of his expertise. He's a patriot. He loves his country. And he saw red flags all over the place when he got involved. It's interesting to point out, by the way, Charlie, that the CEFC that has all these ties to Chinese intelligence, the plan was for Joe Biden, Hunter Biden, and the representatives from CEFC to actually share office space in Washington, D.C. In the emails, Hunter talks about getting signage put up to that effect. The only reason that does not happen is one of the company executives from CEFC gets arrested by the FBI on espionage and bribery charges in New York, and that blows the whole thing up. So it just tells you this fundamental question of the Biden family being compromised has to be looked at. I believe they are, and I believe that there's substantial evidence that they are.
So let me ask you a technical question that I'm just curious, and you don't have to, you know, divulge your trade secrets. So you say $31 million that you know of. Peter, how do you find this information? I mean, it's not like you could type it into Yahoo or Bing. Like how I'm just curious. Can you just kind of give our audience a little bit of an inside peek? Like you have a team I know that works on this. I'm super curious about that.
Yeah, you know, the challenge a lot of times you face in research today is not too little information, but too much. So the 31 figure is very straightforward. $20 million comes from the deal that he did with BHR, which is that private equity fund. And that information comes from the University of Chicago, a business school professor who looks at the size of the fund that Hunter was brought into, his 10% ownership stake, and says, this is what this is worth by sort of industry standards. It could be worth more, but that's what it's worth. So in some cases, it's getting expert analysis, serious expert analysis. In other instances, for example, the other $11 million, you have $5 million transferred to one of Hunter Biden's companies, another $6 million that's transferred to Hunter and to some of his companies. That actually comes from so-called suspicious activity reports or SARs reports that are filed with the Treasury Department. Anytime a U.S. bank sees money flowing from a, let's say, sketchy source or a troubling source to what is regarded as a politically connected figure, and Hunter Biden would be one of those, obviously, it gets flagged and it goes to the Treasury Department. Those reports relating to Hunter Biden were released by the Senate last year. So we went and looked at those reports. We then went to Chinese corporate records and we looked at Chinese business publications and other sources to trace who were involved in these companies. And then we, of course, found out through the Hunter Biden laptop who were the people that made those deals happen. And then we did a detailed research analysis on Chinese sources on who those individuals are. Every bit of information that we use is footnoted in the back. Unlike some sources that were used in the Steele dossier, we don't use any anonymous sources. As far as I'm concerned, anonymous sources are basically worthless. You should be able to show them and share them, and people should be able to replicate them on their own. And you can do that with this book.
I have the book in front of me, and I am not exaggerating. There are 100 pages of notes and citations. I'm just kind of estimating. That's about right. Yeah, 100 pages. If you count the index and you count the notes. The Fusion GPS dossier definitely did not have that. And I think that's so interesting. And your answer is straightforward, which is like we just did the work. Like we just looked at what was out there. We went into the documents. You know, it's amazing. We have multi-billion dollar media companies that wouldn't touch this stuff. Yeah. But if an investigative journalist says, okay, well, what would this be and what would that be? $31 million to the current president of the United States. You think that would concern some people. Certainly did when Trump wanted to do a hotel deal or something in Moscow. This is really important for people to realize that the rise of China has been fueled by our decisions. We made this happen. We have subsidized it. We facilitated it. We've covered up for it. And the Chinese Communist Party is on pace to eclipse us in every single capacity, militarily, technologically. And they believe that their view of civilization is superior to ours. These people do not mess around. They want global conquest. Peter, I want to go over two topics in the 5 minutes we have remaining. Number one, I want you to talk about any one of the other elites. And then finally, I want to just you to hit what can be done here. How can we bring justice to all of this? Because this stuff is so obviously either illegal and definitely immoral.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would say let's talk about LeBron James a little bit. Obviously, he's very outspoken on a lot of issues. I think says a lot of outrageous things about the country and whatnot. But he has a long history of kowtowing to China. People are obviously familiar with the case a couple of years ago in the NBA where the Houston Rockets general manager tweeted something out about Hong Kong. And LeBron James said, oh, you know, he's speaking out of ignorance. The fact of the matter is LeBron James has been doing this for years, and he does it because in addition to his massive deal with Nike, he has deals in China. He has a line of shoes that are made only for the Chinese elite. These have, you know, ancient Chinese symbols on them. They're very coveted by the Chinese elite. Some of the Nike shoes that are released in the United States get released in China first. He has deals with Chinese state media companies for the distribution of his films and other video products in China. So these are very deep ties, and it's been that way for a long time. You might be too young to remember Darfur back in 2007 and 2008. But this was a terrible situation where the regime in South Sudan was slaughtering hundreds of thousands of Black Christians in the South. That regime was backed by the Chinese government. There was a petition drive launched in the NBA to condemn China for supporting this regime, this kind of Arabic regime that was slaughtering Black Christians in the South. A lot of people in the NBA signed it. LeBron James refused to sign the petition. The only other person on the Cleveland Cavaliers that didn't sign it was a guy on the back bench who had a shoe contract with a Chinese company. So to me, that speaks volumes and it indicates that, you know, in this particular case, certainly to LeBron James, these Black lives did not matter. And I think it really damages his credibility because he's been this way for a long time. And I don't think it's going to change. The money is more important to him than the positions he claims to stands for.
No doubt. What can be done to hold these people to account? Let's just take the Bidens. We're getting so many emails, Peter, hundreds, thousands of emails. Where's the justice? Where's the FBI? Where is this? Is there any hope for justice?
Yeah, I think there is. Look, I'm not going to give up on this until the American people give up on it. And I kind of viewed my role and this organization that I run's role to be kind of a Paul Revere for America, certainly not comparing myself to Paul Revere. But our job is to sort of spread the word and to let people know that, in effect, the British are coming. And now it's up to the American people to gather the Continental Army and fight for it. So one of the things you mentioned earlier, we have to alert our elected officials and tell them we care about this stuff. That's absolutely vital. The second thing I would say is, you know, these companies, these big tech companies, they have shareholder meetings. Buy a couple of shares of stock of Google and go to the shareholder meetings and read some quotes from the book of what these executives say about China and ask them to explain it publicly. I think shame is still a very powerful tool that can be used. And then finally, in the last part of the book, I certainly have some things I recommend our policymakers in Washington should do. Advocate for those, push for those. It can make a difference. And finally, exercise your commercial vote. Don't buy the products of companies yes. that are engaging in these damaging behaviors. And certainly don't buy products from Chinese companies like Huawei that are trying to undermine the United States.
Well, you won't compare yourself to Paul Revere, but I will. You're doing an equivalent moral good to what Paul Revere did, truly, because the Chinese are here. Okay. They're not just coming. They've infiltrated yeah. every single part of American society. We talk about China quite often here on this program, but just to be able to have a piece of literature, research is what this really is, that goes through in an incredibly thorough manner, citing how every vertical of American culture and finance and business has been corrupted by the Chinese Communist Party. It is no mistake. It is a strategy. It's a military strategy, elite capture, whatever you want to call it, of what I believe is an enemy of the United States, the Chinese Communist Party, that is one by one trying to pick off people that could potentially stop their rise to global power. And Peter, you've exposed that, and it's a great moral good and takes a lot of courage. Thank you. Red-handed by Peter Schweitzer. Peter, thank you so much for joining us for this hour.
I enjoyed it. Thanks, Charlie.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. If you want to support our show, go to charliekirk.com/support. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.